Thank you for listening to The Evolution of Self. I'm your host, AJ Q. This is The Handbook, Part 3. That fucking kiss. That kiss was a gateway drug. There was nothing like it. And at the time, in my wounded state, when the kiss happened, August 17th, 2020, I thought it was the most magical thing in the world. Why did I feel like that? Because in my state, I needed to be rescued. I needed a hero. There was a song playing in the background, Bon Iver, Blood Bank. In part of the song, he says, as the moon waned to crescent, we started to kiss. And that's the exact moment that he kissed me. And that night, the moon was a waning crescent. Earlier that day, before I went over his house, I was sitting on my bed and I was journaling. And I was listening to that song on repeat. And I was imagining this man kissing me. Basically, the whole thing was kind of a manifestation, right? And I held on to the fact that it was such a magical kiss when I was wounded. And then as I started healing through my trauma and my need to be rescued and saved, I saw the bigger picture. What actually happened that day? The day that he leaned in and decided to finally kiss me. I was separated from my ex-husband for only about 8 weeks, and I was starting to find myself attracted to another man, and I was really scared. I was so fucking scared because I don't have my shit in order yet. I have to depend on my ex for support, for financial support. We are completely dependent on this man. They talk about isolation in narcissistic relationships. And in the marriage, there were times where I wanted to go to work. I tried to go to work. And he would do this thing, which I didn't realize what it was at this time. Kind of a guilt-tripping, manipulation, passive-aggressive thing. Well, if you go to work, then that means the kids are going to be in daycare. And we sent our oldest to daycare years ago. And remember what happened? He was sick all the time. So if you go to work, our kids are going to be sick all the time. That's not going to be good. Okay? I wanted to work. I was a very independent person since I was 16 years old. And I had a pretty damn good work ethic. And plus, I knew that it was good for me. It's good for my emotional well-being, my mental well-being, therefore good for my physical well-being. And the whole domesticated life, it wasn't for me. I was never born for a domesticated life. Some people, they just have that. They have that natural, like, nurturing, motherly bone in their body. I did not have that. And I'm gonna guess it was because of the trauma that I went through that that was kind of stripped away from me. So I really had to work extra hard to find that. And I think it's great. You know, there's a lot of women out there who love the idea of just staying home and raising their children and homeschooling them and just, you know, get it. It's not for me, especially with all my sensory issues. And I have a need for space. I have a huge need for space that I need alone time for my mental health. If I don't have that alone time, then I don't have this window of tolerance. Like it's shut. And then I am not my best self. So in order to be my best self, I need there to be peace. I need there to be quiet. I need to be able to move freely and have my independence to go outside, to do what I want. And obviously, you're restricted. You're limited in doing that when you are a single parent with a bunch of kids. So the schedule I have with my ex is perfect because he has them a few days a week. And I take that time and I just move freely. You know, I just move through the woods. I'm staring at birds. I'm in nature. I'm riding my motorcycle. I'm doing my podcast. And then I have the children for like 4 or 5 days straight. And yeah, it could be a lot. It could be a lot without having that second set of hands to help you out. But I manage. I manage because I am given that space that I need. So it creates a balance. So I would say things like that, like, I want to go back to work. I would try to go back to work. And he would constantly say these kind of things. And I would just feel this deep sadness. Like, I know that I want to do this. I know that this is the best thing for me. Wait a minute. What kind of person would you be? What kind of shitty piece of shit mother would you be to just put your children in harm's way? To just know that they're going to be sick all the time and that you're responsible for that. You're the one that made that happen because you decided that you wanted to get a job. How selfish of you. This is the kind of like intrusive thinking that would happen, which it's fucking ridiculous. Now that I am at where I'm at, like, sure, he's entitled to his feelings. He's entitled to his thoughts. There's no support there. Your wife wants to go back to work And you have to be like, no, you can't do that because it's our kids are going to be sick all the time because you decided to do that. How is that? No, it's just not okay. Like, what's going to happen when they go to school? It's going to be the same thing. So for whatever reason, it worked though. It worked. And I was completely dependent on this person financially. And so now we're not together. I'm single, sure. But now I have two young kids and I go to work and that money just goes to pay for daycare. How do I do this? In a system that it's like designed to keep you stuck, how the fuck do I survive off of something like that? So despite everything that happened between my ex-husband and I and all of the unhealthy patterns, the toxicity, he always showed up financially. And I don't know what the intentions were. I don't know it's because that was the way he could show up. He could protect and provide in that way, or whether it be external validation and reputation. Like, he doesn't want to look like this deadbeat dad that takes off and leaves his, you know, old family homeless. I have no idea. I do know that he basked in validation and that he needed that and he cared what people thought about him. That was a priority over what his own behaviors were. Instead of actually reflecting on, why do I do this? Why am I so angry? Why do I treat my family like this? The concern was, I don't want people to know that I'm angry with my family and treat my family like this. Like, the priorities were so backwards. So I do know for sure that reputation was a big deal for him. I also don't really think he's a scummy person though. So I think that he is going to take care of his family for the rest of his life. And I think that that's beautiful. If that's the way that he can show up, that's the way that he can show up. But it kind of put me in a bind because I didn't want to be dependent on him financially. Because if I'm dependent on him financially, then I still have this tie to him, right? There's still some element of control there. And I've experienced it manipulating me with finances, like having this joint account still. And he can go out and spend $800 in 2 weeks on gas station expenses, no bills whatsoever. And then I go to try to pay the mortgage and there's no money in there and I get blamed for it. When I've spent nothing and I could tally up everything and give it to him. I could give him copies of all of this. This is where the money is going. This is what's happening to it. And it doesn't matter. It's something that I did. This is why I don't want to have any kind of tie around that, because the lack of accountability, the lack of awareness there, it's like you still have to carry this thing around. Like, you're going to get blamed even when nothing's your fault. Fortunately, I have gotten better and I've learned how to ground myself and to not take that personally, to see things as projection and double standards and all that. It still doesn't feel that great, but I've learned to navigate it pretty well. So at the time, this was 4 years ago. This was like fresh. This was new. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to like run away, leave state, pull any kind of child support. I don't know if he's going to bring me to court. I don't know what's going to happen. I wasn't really worried about the court thing because I had a lot of things against him, like abusive behaviors against him. And because of that reputation he was worried about, that kind of protected me and kept me safe. So I wasn't worried about going to court to, I don't know, he's going to find something to use against me, because there was nothing to use against me at all. In fact, it was the opposite. It was more like, are we protected? Because his name is on the house. My name isn't on the house. You know, am I going to lose my home? Like, am I going to lose these children? Because I don't have the finances to take care of them. So what do I do here? So I'm sitting on this man's couch and I'm expressing this. I am crying. I am so sad. I am so scared. And I say to him, I'm really fucking scared. What's going to happen when he finds out that I like somebody else? What's going to happen if he finds out that I'm seeing somebody else? And this guy's like, I'm going to get a lawyer. I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect you. I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep you safe. Man, those words. He never took action, but he would say it with his words. He would always say, oh, I have a friend of a friend that's a lawyer. And like, I mean, constantly. So he's my rescuer and hero, right? So I'm sitting there at the edge of the couch, just crying, feeling so scared. And in that moment, what does he decide to do with that information? He looks at me, says, fuck it. And he leans in and he kisses me. And right before he gets to my mouth, he says, hi. And I look at him and I say, hi. And then we kiss. And because the kiss was just such a great kiss, and I haven't felt that kind of affection in years, I didn't really focus on the fact that somebody just took advantage of my vulnerabilities. Somebody just preyed on my vulnerabilities. Somebody did not respect my space to heal. They got the getting while the getting was good. That is how I see it now, because I healed to the point where I can recognize that. I wasn't there at the time. At that time, I needed a rescuer. I wanted a rescuer. I wanted to be saved. I didn't know how to save myself yet. I didn't even understand any of the wounds that were lurking within me. Abandonment, rejection, neglect. I had no fucking clue. I was a fucking newbie when it came to psychology. I had no understanding of myself yet. So I just got this massive hit of dopamine, serotonin. Forget about it. It doesn't matter. And now, whew, I am so glad that I got to this space that nothing like that could ever happen again. If I'm emotional, if I'm expressing emotions like that, if I'm telling you that I'm scared and you decide to get all physical in that moment, that actually shows you exactly how much this person was avoidant to emotions. How much vulnerability scared this person, and that their physical touch, that was their type of love. That was their love language, that like physical, well, that feels good. Emotions feel scary. So what can I do about this? So when you get to a new place of healing, you heal yourself, you provide that safety within, you start attracting energies that are also safe. And now if I'm in a situation where I'm expressing vulnerabilities, I'm expressing my emotions like, hey, I'm afraid, I'm scared, I'm sad, the people that I'm with, they support me. They sit there, they hold space, they listen. They're emotionally available, they're respectful, they're valuing my time, they are respecting my space to heal. They're not trying to like push through that. And oh man, I know that I healed that because when I separated from this person in August, there was a new male energy that came in. And this was somebody that I really respected and I cared for my whole life. And this new friendship, I mean, it recirculated back into my life. And I was so happy. I was so happy to have this friend that was very spiritual and we were always good buddies. And something happened. You know, he felt a certain way about me, I guess his whole life. He had this idea of who I was to him, like a soulmate, like a romantic soulmate. And to me, he felt like a brother. And I was only separated from this guy for like a week. And this energy was very fast moving. And we connected very like intensely and quickly. And I said, listen, like I need space. I need space to heal. Like I want to be on my own right now. Because for the first time in my life, I didn't want a rescuer. I didn't want a savior. I wanted to rescue and save myself. I didn't want any kind of energy circling around me, trying to like be a part of this journey right now. I need to do this solo. Especially the energy of a man who has feelings for me in that way. This is not the time. This is not the place. Like, can you please respect my space to heal? And he would seem to get it. He would seem to get it for a couple days. And then all of a sudden I would get like a 10-minute long voice message about how I'm his destiny. I just don't know it yet because I'm so traumatized. Excuse me. But what I recognized is that I was triggering this person's rejection wounds hardcore. And he was auditioning for my love hardcore. Like, maybe if I do this, she'll think I'm enough. Maybe if I do this, she'll choose me. He couldn't understand that it wasn't about that. It had nothing to do with rejecting who he was as a human being. It was because for the first time in my life, I wasn't rejecting myself. But he wasn't at a place where he could receive that information because the trigger that was happening within him was so painful that it must have something to do with who he is as a person. And so when I realized that this person was not respecting my space to heal, I immediately set boundaries and he wasn't in my life anymore. You see the fucking growth there? Where 3 years earlier, I allowed somebody to do that. I allowed somebody to swoop in, to rescue me, to prey on my vulnerabilities. 3 years later, that cycle was complete. That lesson was learned. It was over and it was never going to happen again. And now I have somebody in my life who respects the hell out of my boundaries, who doesn't push, who doesn't manipulate, who doesn't prey on them. He just gives me space. In fact, he asks if I need space before I even realize that I need space. It's like he's so in tune with me. He knows what I need sometimes before I even realize that I need it. It's like, what? And that is what drew me into him, is that, you know, I tried running away. I thought I was done with this whole situation. And he gave me space for 2 weeks. And then something happened and shifted in me and came back around. And I believe that that was a big part of it. That was so attractive that this human being respected my space to heal. He didn't pry. He didn't push. He didn't overstep. He just gave me time. He gave me time. And it was everything. So anyways, after that kiss, that was kind of it. That was the beginning of all of the pain and the suffering and the shadow work. And yeah, it all needed to happen, but this is the handbook. I'm not just talking about my shadows and self-reflection and my own wounding. I'm talking about patterns of other people, trying to like identify the red flags that I overlooked. And if you're listening, hey, maybe it can help you see things for what they are too. Of course, you know, in order to be able to see things very clearly, it helps to get to a point where we can see ourselves very clearly. Like, I know that this is a misalignment, so why am I pushing my own boundaries to cater to that? Why am I suppressing who I am and what my needs are to audition for love? Because what, I don't want this person to leave me? It's like, but then we end up leaving ourselves, and we don't deserve that. So you guys may notice that there's going to be like a change of inflection. I made this like 3-hour long recording 2 months ago. And at the time, this person, my ex, he did something on social media and he did it intentionally to trigger me. I know that he did. And guess what? It worked. And so I made this very long recording. And what I'm doing now is I'm taking sections of that and I'm creating different chapters. And I'm calling it the handbook, and that's what I'm doing. So right now, this is the present time. I'm a lot better. I've like healed through it. I navigated my way through that trigger. I evolved. And then 2 months ago, different version of me. This is how fast the ascension process can happen, though. So I take some of that recording and I pull it over here. And if you feel that shift in energy, that's because it was a different energy. It's an entirely different version of me. So here's where we left off. I never had words of affirmation growing up. I didn't really receive words in my marriage. I certainly didn't say good things to myself or believe in good things to myself. But he had a way with words. I mean, the abundance of words, the things that he would say. I'm the luckiest person in the world. I'm so lucky. I'm the luckiest man. Here's present day me interjecting. I just made a video on this yesterday about being lucky, being so lucky. And, you know what? Why don't I play that for you? The sound quality might be a little bit off, so adjust your dials.
I am so lucky. Like, I am the luckiest person in the world. Like, I cannot believe that you're mine. I'm so lucky to be with you. I'm so lucky to have you. How did I get to be so lucky? I held on to words like that big time, even though the actions didn't align with those words. Those words, I depended on those words to survive. My wounds needed to hear those words. My ego needed to hear those words. And I love this shift that has taken place, that I don't need another human being to feel lucky to be with me in order to feel good about myself. In fact, I want this person to feel good enough and lucky enough on their own. I want them to feel like they are worthy and deserving of my affection. About a month ago, the person that I'm connected with, he did make a passing comment which alluded to the fact that he believes that I am better than he is. Did it boost my ego? No, not at all. And in the past, it absolutely would have. It would have worked. Swoon, you think I'm better than you? Oh, that means you're gonna treat me better. Now that we know how that works out, right? Self-sabotaging behaviors, manifesting your worst fears into the physical. If you don't feel like you're worthy or deserving of something, you are going to act in ways to confirm your fears. So when this passing comment came out, I nipped that in the bud immediately, and we communicated and had a really nice conversation about that one. I love that I got to a place where I will dismiss the idea of anybody putting me on a pedestal before they even have a chance to do it. I don't want to be on a pedestal. I'm not above you. You and I are equals. And as somebody that I care about, I would never want you to feel like you would have to audition for my love. I would never want you to feel like you're not deserving of me, that you have to keep trying harder and harder. If that's the case, it's just a misalignment. It's just an incompatibility. To feel good enough on your own that you don't have to depend on those kind of words anymore, and to feel good enough on your own that you don't actually have to say those words to somebody to like audition for their love, I care about you too much to enable that kind of thing. I care about myself too much to allow that. Providing words of affirmation, great, great. Having to depend on that, no. This is the shift right here. Feeling good enough on your own that you don't ever need anybody to put you on a pedestal ever again.
And that is it right there. That is everything. I depended on this person telling me that. Like, oh, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. I can't believe you're mine. I can't believe that I watched you marry another man and have a family. I've wanted you my whole life and I still ended up with you. Oh my God, how did I get to be so lucky? And the thing, one of the things that he did a few months ago, and we were still connected on Facebook. It was like our only connection. It was like I couldn't remove this person and he couldn't remove me. His status said, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. I hope really cool shit keeps happening to me because I'm like so lucky. And right then I was like, yep, there's a girl. There's got to be another girl. Hey, none of my fucking business, right? But I saw very clearly this person perpetuated the same exact pattern. He just perpetuated it. And I guarantee you he says all of that to this girl. The same exact things he would say to me. Like, I'm the luckiest person in the world. How did I get to be so lucky? I feel so lucky. Like, that's what he said to me, like, every day for, like, the first few months. And then all of a sudden it was like, eh, bleh, bleh. Sorry, I can't say things like that to you anymore because I'm too busy at work. Okay, back to the recording. I never had words of affirmation growing up. I didn't really receive words in my marriage. I certainly didn't say good things to myself or believe in good things to myself. But he had a way with words. I mean the abundance of words, the things that he would say. I'm the luckiest person in the world. I'm so lucky. I'm the luckiest man. I've had a crush on you since I was 4 years old and I got to watch you marry another man, have kids with another man, and I still got to be with you. How did I get to be so lucky? I'm so fucking lucky. You're the most beautiful woman in the whole world. These are the kinds of messages that I would get daily for like 3 months. I mean, it was so abundant. Like, it was like he was so present. He was so there. He was so consistent with those words. And then one day it just kind of stopped to, good morning, beautiful. You know, it just changed to this one thing. And it seemed like a switch. And I know that when we are in new relationships, that there is a phase in the beginning, of course, that you're going to feel good. You're going to feel all these happy, floaty, beautiful chemicals feeling good in your body. And I think that's just science, you know. Doesn't mean we're all out to hurt each other. Our best foot forward, you know. And it naturally progresses. But here's the thing, though, too, now that I'm on the outside, is that things take time. Things shouldn't be so quick because it takes months to get to know people. And I know I shouldn't say you shouldn't because we all have our own unique experiences. Like maybe you married somebody after a month and you're 20 years into your marriage and you're happily ever after, you know. I guess not all shoes fit the same foot, right? In my experience though, getting to know people takes time. But I didn't have a sense of self yet. So how could I understand other people when I didn't really have a sense of self? I just felt confused. I felt very confused. And I didn't have courage to use my voice. And so I internalized everything. And my wounds came out hardcore. And this is the first time in my life that I was given some kind of self-awareness. I was starting to crack open, to see things, to see the dark, to see the light, to have understanding. I never had that before. I'm finally starting to have that at 38 years old. And that is why I call this person the catalyst to my spiritual awakening. Or my twin. Does that mean that I should be thankful and that I should have gratitude for everything that happened? No. If you're right there with me, no. You don't feel like you have to be thankful to them for wreaking havoc on your fucking nervous system, man. They didn't do the work. They operated in a very wounded place to trigger all of your core wounds, and you were at a place in your life where you were given this profound awareness and insight. Something happened. They don't have to take the credit for that. You did the journey. You did the work. You don't have to give them credit for hurting you. Now, I say that I'll always have love for this person. I do. And there's that dichotomy again, too. Like, you can love somebody, but you don't have to be okay or even forgiving to the things that they've done. You can love them from very far away. And sometimes I'm like, well, maybe I love this person because his wounding did crack me the fuck open, where I loved myself for the very first time in my life, where I broke a lot of my own patterns, where I will never be placed in a situation like this again, because I learned so much in 3 years, that I'm safer now than I ever have been. So, do I love him for who he is as a human, or do I love him because he helped lead the way for me to love myself? I don't know that yet. It's not one of those things where, yeah, we grew together, we evolved together, we healed together, we helped spread healing throughout the world together. No, he didn't heal with me, he didn't grow with me, he didn't evolve or change with me at all. He learned how to manipulate better, and one day I learned how to see right through it. And his wounding hurt me and triggered me enough to crack me the fuck open, to understand parts of myself, to understand my shadows, to integrate darkness, light, to find love, to find peace. And I did that all publicly for 3 years. My dark night is live for the world to see. So maybe that was the purpose, right? Because it did help a lot of people. It helped heal a lot of people. Inadvertently, it wasn't even the intention. It was me hitting record and talking about my feelings and talking about what the hell just cracked me open that morning. And it did something because it was relatable, because it was raw, it was emotion, it was pain. And we've been taught to hide that for so long that I imagine people scrolling across TikTok and seeing somebody just crying publicly, where a lot of people would make fun of that. And a lot of people did. I got a lot of hate for sure. But it didn't stop me from who I was becoming, because it was fucking destiny. It's always destiny, you know? I just looked at the timestamp, 33:33. Damn. That'll change with editing, but holy crap, man. It's so beautiful. I love it when it happens. So I guess the destiny of us was him to hurt me, to crack me open, so that I could be a good leader. I could be a good leader for myself and for other people. Hey, you know, I guess that's cool when you see it like that. It doesn't make everything that happened okay. So I remember this shift, it was so massive, the words just dropped. It was what I felt was my love language. Because every time he said these beautiful words to me, man, I felt like I was floating. I was floating, like I was put on a pedestal. He put me so high up on the pedestal, like the most beautiful things you can imagine somebody saying to you, that was it. That was it. It was like heroic. And remember, he was watching my TikTok videos in the background. He was learning all about what was going on in my last relationship. So he would say these things to me like, I'm not going to be some piece of shit. You know, I'm going to be the man that you need, the man that you've always deserved. Like, I'm just trying to be like a really good person for you. Like, I'm going to be the man that you always deserved. You're worth it. You're worth everything. You're the most amazing person in the world. You're my most favorite person. I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. How did I get so lucky? And in the background, he was cheating. That's the reality of what happens when you hold on to the words. Because the words will blind you. The words will fucking blind you. Because you are blinded to yourself. You are. And it hurts to know that. And that doesn't mean it's justified. But when you pay attention to the actions always tell you the truth. And the truth is that the patterns never tell a lie. And at 3 months in, there was already patterns going on. I just didn't want to believe in it, I think. I think because it felt so good, because the words felt so good. But from week one, he would say things like, oh, I can't wait to kiss you. I miss you so much. I can't wait until I can wrap my arms around you and be with you again. And I was like, you live 10 minutes away. Like, you can literally kiss me anytime you want. You can get in your car and drive to me and kiss me anytime that you want. So why are you just always saying this, but you're not ever taking action? And then I would justify it by being like, oh, well, I don't know. Maybe he just, you know, has social anxiety and he feels like really awkward. And like, I don't know, maybe he's afraid that my ex is going to be here getting the kids. And like, so he's avoiding it. And I don't know, I just kept excusing everything that I already knew. And that was my own pattern. And I accept that version because you know what? It felt good. I hadn't felt good in 18 years. You know, I was dead. I was a robot. I was a puppet. And here I am, this feeling of like new love, you know, the serotonin, dopamine, the hormones just rushing through my bloodstream. It felt like fucking heaven. It felt like pure bliss for the first time in almost 2 decades. So is it really any surprise that I overlooked it? Is it really any surprise that I was being tricked by my own brain? So I would internalize it. And it would rub on that wound that told me that it was because I wasn't worth the effort. It's because I wasn't worthy of driving 10 minutes away for. I wasn't fun enough because I didn't drink and get high. Because then I started noticing that he would drive, like, you know, 45 minutes here, an hour there, like, to do all these things with his friends. But he couldn't drive 10 minutes to me. That our relationship consisted of me driving to him in the evenings or at nighttime and sleeping over, and then him going to work in the morning and me going home. And it was so beautiful, though. Oh, the chemistry and the passion. And I had what people refer to as a Kundalini awakening with this man. I had a lot of sexual trauma, and it took a while to be able to be open to get there. But for the first time ever, I understood physical pleasure. And it wasn't just about that. It's that something happened to my body where it was like a phase for maybe about 2 or 3 months where I would lie beside him. And every time he touched me, now mind you, I was with 10 other people physically. Every single time he touched me, just the smallest touch on my shoulder, on my skin, my whole body, it almost felt like I was like convulsing. But it wasn't a bad feeling. It was like head to toe, like shaking, like starting from my feet all the way up to like my crown. It was like something was happening. I don't know how to articulate it. I really don't. Because I was with 10 other people and nothing like this has ever happened before. And it wasn't until 2.5, 3 years later where I heard people talking about Kundalini awakenings where I was like, holy shit, that was it. That's what was happening to me. Doesn't mean it was happening to him, but it was sure as fuck happening to me because it was part of my awakening. It was part of the process. This was before these very spiritual, metaphysical, beautiful, witchy type things began happening to me. So it was like this whole thing, it was just like this gradual process of enlightenment, awakening. But at the time, I didn't actually know what any of it was. So back to the words. I did have courage to say something. I think 4 months in. I didn't know really how to communicate then. I was learning. I was really learning how to better myself. I found that I used to be really judgmental in the past. And this man was the epitome of, on a superficial level, of nobody I would ever date. Like, I mean, I was like, I wouldn't date anybody wearing socks and sandals. I wouldn't date anybody like wearing like tank tops. I wouldn't date anybody like, I mean, these are all very surface superficial things. And it's not because I thought I was like, you know, the hottest thing ever and stuff like that. I realized that it was just a way of protecting myself. Like it was a defense mechanism, like being judgmental over superficial things. It was just a way to keep me safe and protected, to not let people get close enough, right? And when you judge other people, you are most certainly judging parts of yourself. Now, you don't have to like things, right? Like Crocs. I don't like Crocs. I'm never going to wear a pair of Crocs. And doesn't mean that it's okay to judge the fuck out of you for wearing them. If you like them, it doesn't mean that you're bad or wrong or gross or whatever. Like, you do you. And it's really peaceful and beautiful to get to that place of just realizing that everybody can just be who they are. And as long as we're not hurting each other, it's all good, you know? So he was the epitome, basically, of nobody that I would ever date. And so this was kind of the beginning of it, where I wanted to be better for him. Because this was somebody that I knew and loved my whole life, that I'm not gonna judge him. I don't wanna be like that. I don't wanna be superficial around him. Like, girl, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? There were a lot of things that I would kind of like suppress or bury down because of the shame of that or the guilt of that. And it wasn't until like quite a while later where my therapist introduced me the difference between judgment and discernment. And it turned out a lot of those things that I thought would be judgment, it was actually my discernment of knowing like this does not align with me. This is not compatible. I don't like this. This is not good. Yeah, I just, you know, bypassed it all and overlooked it all because I didn't want to be a bad person to him. So instead, I was a bad person to myself, right? Because that's abandoning parts of yourself. And I didn't know that. I know that now. So I said, what did I say? If I could pull back the screenshots, yeah, I don't want to go there though. I was like, things just seem different. Like you used to say like these words all the time and you don't say them anymore. And he's like, well, I'm at work. Like I can't just like be sitting on my phone all day. Like he said something like that and it was really confusing. It just added to the confusion because nothing changed. Like his job, like he sat in his work truck a lot. That's where he messaged me most often, was because he was on Instagram a lot, messaging me through Instagram. Nothing changed. So why is he using this as an excuse now? Like it didn't make any sense and it just like furthered the confusion. And I think I brought that up. And then he goes, well, you know what? I can't be forced to say things. They just have to come naturally. I can't be forced to say anything like that. Which, then that was it. I didn't say anything else after that. Why doesn't it come natural to you anymore? Why isn't it organic to you anymore? Why do you feel like you have to be forced to say things? You said them. He said them all the time. Like, so many times throughout the day, he would say these things and it just dropped down to, like, maybe good morning, beautiful. Or maybe a single heart. And you're trying to tell me, well, it's because it's got to come natural now. Like, because you're forced to say things just because I asked why the energy shift. And I internalized that because I stopped talking. Because as you could see, clearly that wasn't a safe response for him to have. That wasn't a safe place. That wasn't reassuring. Which I don't think I realized that. I just, you overstepped, girl. You know, you shouldn't have used your voice. Now it's going to get even worse. And that's the thing that I noticed. That would be part of the pattern, is that anytime I expressed a concern, anytime I expressed a need, it would be taken away even more. Even more. So that wound inside of me that I was working hard to heal, the one that's like, have courage, find your voice, express your needs, express your fears, express your desires, like you're worthy enough of doing that, you're safe enough to do that, I would do that. And it was almost like I was being punished with silence or something. And so it would perpetuate the wounding. Okay, you see, this is why you shouldn't talk. This is why you shouldn't ask for anything. You shouldn't say anything. You know, and ultimately in the whole, like, I didn't even ask for bare minimum. I really didn't. Hey, like, a good morning text, a good night text and phone call, like, that consistency, it helps me to feel reassured and it helps me to feel safe, you know, because, again, he was watching all my TikTok videos and, like, he was watching everything. He was gathering all this information. He knew everything I was going through. I would talk about all my childhood wounds. I would start to talk about abandonment. I would start to talk about all of these things. I would talk about complex trauma, PTSD, and how the things you need in a relationship, because we can only heal some relational trauma in relationships. So he would claim he was watching these videos to, like, understand me better and to, like, learn me better so that he could be there to help me. But he actually wouldn't be there to help me. If I had triggers because of my ex-husband, he was very supportive. He would just be gentle and kind and he would rub my back. And, you know, I healed some of that trauma with him because my ex was very, like, micromanaging, very controlling, very passive aggressive, had something to say and criticized every single thing I did. Whereas he didn't care about any of that. He was actually so far removed from anything I did, which I thought that was, like, healthy and healing. And I now realize it was part of his, you know, avoidant, like, narcissism, attachment, whatever he had going on, where he had to keep me at a distance because of intimacy. It's like he never wanted to get to know me. He never tried to get to know me. He never asked me questions about me. That was never there. But I didn't even realize it because the words that he would say were so good. And because the physical chemistry was so good. The physical chemistry was so good because it's all we shared. We didn't share any other forms of intimacy. I mean, a little bit here and there, but not really. So because of his own wounding of distancing and disconnecting as a way to control for him to feel safe, I guess, that healed some of those things inside of me that said I had to be completely dependent on a human being because I didn't know how to speak. I didn't know how to pump gas. I didn't know how to cook. I didn't know how to wash my clothes. I didn't know how to buy the right milk. I didn't know how to peel a fucking potato. And he didn't care about any of that stuff at all, that I gained my independence back in that way because he wasn't there criticizing me and micromanaging me the way that my ex was. So that was a big part of my healing in that relationship. I know that was one of the many reasons. So when I had triggers from my ex, it was helpful in those ways. But anytime he did something that was hurtful, anytime there was shady ass behavior, anytime there was red flags, anytime something he did hurt me, if I were to talk about it, talk about DARVO, man. If you haven't heard of DARVO, it stands for Deny, Attack, Reverse Victim, Offender. And it's a tactic that somebody uses to deflect responsibility onto somebody that they have abused. And the very first time this happened was 6 months in, where I stumbled across his Instagram following. And when I tell you it was an accident, trust that it was a fucking accident. And I learned hardcore that everything he was saying to me, he put me on a pedestal so high with all the things he said about how amazing I am. Like, I'm the girl of his dreams. I'm, you know, he's the luckiest man in the world. I'm the most beautiful woman in the world. He never wanted to get married before me, but now that, you know, I'm here, like, it matters. It never mattered before me, right? I mean, I'm the most beautiful girl in the world. My body is this. I'm, like, amazing in all ways sexually. Like, I mean, you fucking name it. This man spit out, right? And I never cared. I never looked to see who he was following. I didn't care about social media shit. I did not fucking care. And one night, he posted a story of a very beautiful artist painting something in her underwear. And I was like, well, that's really cool art, you know? And I clicked on the story and it brought me to her page. And her whole platform was like basically doing art naked. And holy shit. It's like, you know that you have wounding, but you don't know that you have wounding so deep until something like that triggers the fuck out of it. I mean, everything came out, like that sexual trauma, that deep-rooted conditioning that as women, that we are only as good as what our bodies are, what we can do for men, how we look visually, physically. We're sexual objects. We're either used for our body or we are rejected for our body. And my sexuality, it was so hidden and it was starting to come out with this man. It was a very sacred thing for me. This was such a sacred thing for me. It was so important. And to know that I was giving him my body, which is to me, it's my most vulnerable state, is giving somebody my body, allowing them access to this most sacred and potent energy. And you're just following 1,000 naked women. And there's your name liking photos every single day. Like, it fucking devastated me, man. Like, someone builds you up so high. And this was the first time in my life, which I now know it was very surface of me because I wasn't quite doing the work yet on that deep level. It was the words that were building me up. So I was also putting myself on a pedestal for the first time in my life. And it got kicked so fucking far. I fell down so fucking hard when I saw all that. How could he tell me that I'm the most beautiful girl in the world and that my body is this and everything I do sexually is this, but then every day he has to look at these people who look nothing like me. The man that I love has to look at people physically, has to gratify himself to photos of women that don't represent me at all. How were my wounds not supposed to come up? You know what I mean? And I couldn't even talk about it. I was like so dead. And at this point, TikTok was my therapy. So I understand. I understand why. You know, this was my community. You guys have really helped me. You supported me through so many things. Like, I probably wouldn't have been alive if it wasn't for your validation when I needed it. And I certainly needed it during this time in my life too. And after seeing all that, like, I couldn't communicate to him because there was this divide too where it was like, I felt so sick to my stomach. I felt like it was cheating. It felt like wrong. It felt like everything he said to me was a lie. There was no honor. There was no faithfulness. There was no loyalty. There was no protecting the sanctity of my body. And I was in a trigger and I made a TikTok video in the middle of that trigger. There was no way I was ever going to be able to speak to him about it. And you guys helped me a lot. It was awful, man. And he ended up watching my TikToks to see what was wrong. And the thing is by this time, roughly 2 or 3 months into the relationship, I had asked him to stop watching my TikToks. I said, listen, they're like therapy for me. And I don't think it's a good idea. And also I'm talking about like behaviors of my ex and this somehow like fuels you and gives you some kind of anger. And I don't want you to feel that in your body. Like, please stop watching my TikToks. Okay, I will. And then I found that he was doing it again. And then I asked him again. These are boundaries that I was setting and he wasn't respecting it. And then, you know, I don't know. I guess I justified it where I was like, well, I guess he just wants to learn. You know, I just like I was compromising my boundaries to make somebody else comfortable. I was like, well, I guess how can I blame him? You know, the person that he loves the most in the world has a platform and I probably only had like 10,000 followers at the time. of course, like, I would be interested too. I would be curious too. Like, is this person talking about a relationship? Are they talking about me? What are they talking about? Like, would I be able to respect that boundary? I don't know. Either way, I just kind of justified it, you know? So then him finding out what was wrong in this way where I went public, I'm sure that that was very shameful for him. I'm sure he felt a lot of shame in that. And Darvo, he completely flipped the script on me and was like, you know, I'm so tired of walking on eggshells around you. You think that I'm gonna dump you because I like something like a geographical location like California. Like, I'm so tired of this. And that was a bit invalidating and gaslighty because what was happening, it was the first 6 months we were together, he was constantly talking about California, how it was his favorite place in the world and how he wants to move out there and how he even got his kid's mom to be okay with moving out there. Like, in a separate place, of course, but so they could, like, all go out there. Like, he was saying things to me like this. And then he would be like, well, it's not important anymore because you're important. I'm going to stay here for you. But then he would talk about his dream again of wanting to be in California. And you know what that, like, did? The up and down, that, like, it was, like, negative, positive, negative, positive. Like, I'm going to stay here for you, but just so you know, you're taking my dream away from me. All this, like, guilt would come up, you know? Like, I don't want to keep you here if you don't want to be here. And so I would, like, cry. And my rejection, my abandonment, all of these things were coming up that I was like, I'm going to ruin his life. I'm going to prevent him from living his dreams. So, yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to let you go now. And I don't know if it was a full-on breakup. I think he kind of, like, held me in and we ended up coming back together where he reassured me and he was like it's not important, you're the most important thing. Then he, like, pulled that card again. So I don't think it was an actual, like, official breakup, but I was like, you keep talking about this, how it's your dream, and I'm like, I can't go, I have 3 kids, I can't leave. Well, that's okay, like, you're the most important thing, so it doesn't matter. Like, oh, I can't wait until I can move to California, like, I can't wait, you know? It just, so that was the thing he said immediately. This was about, like, why does the person I love have to look at other beautiful women every day? And it didn't help that they looked like they were all, like, 18. So we also have wounds in us that are, like, we decrease in value when we age because our physical beauty diminishes and goes down. So we're not important anymore. Like, this is, it's all fucking bullshit. It's just bullshit. And then men like this, emotionally immature men like this, because that is what that is, that don't have self-discipline, they didn't master self-control, they didn't face any of their own things or their shame spirals or anything like that. They just have escapism and addictions and they cope in these ways, which I understand is their own conditioning, but it's not our responsibility to heal them. They hopefully can get to a place where they can heal themselves, but we, like, self-abandon to get them to see that, right? So their own conditioning of objectifying women and over-sexualizing women and this kind of superficial thing, it just perpetuates the wounding that we have inside of us. That's all it fucking does. I was, like, so disturbed. Like, I just felt like my whole body was used and I was manipulated and, like, I mean, it was just terrible. And so his go-to was to, like, flip it around and tell me how he was tired of walking in eggshells because I almost broke up with him over California. And then he says, you know, I tell you all the time that you're the most beautiful thing ever. And then he says this to me, but the real shit in life doesn't mean anything to you. Does that sound like me? No, it sounds more like him, doesn't it? This is before I learned about projection. So he says that the real shit to me, and I'm the most fucking real person I know, I'm going to tell you that right now, that means nothing to me. And that he doesn't find anything wrong with it. We just have different views. And I was like, okay, I was actually really nice about it because what I said to him is, listen, this doesn't have to make you a bad guy. You can be with somebody who's okay with this, but I'm never going to be okay with this. This is a deal breaker for me. This is a deal breaker for me. And you know what he did with that information? I understand it now. I didn't understand it at first, but I understand now that it's, like, really painful for you. I understand it now. Then he went on to say these things about, like, he just didn't think it was a big deal because, like, they're not real. What he said, they're not real people. They're all photoshopped and it's all filters and it's, like, not real. Like, then why are you looking at people that you deem as robots? Why does that turn you on? Why is that a thing? Like, it was just so much deflection. And then he flipped it around to make himself the victim when he was like, I'm so tired
of walking on eggshells around you. I'm just so tired. And you know, I just want to have a peaceful life where I'm hanging out with my kid and I'm hanging out with my parents before they die. And then getting to know this person, he was the most neglectful person in the world with his kid, because he was neglectful to himself. But this kid, I cry for this child, because he just doesn't have anybody. He's surrounded by people that are so fucking neglectful because all they do is chase their own selfish self-gratification, that they pawn him off on unhealthy people. They ignore him. They leave him alone by himself. And then they punish him for sneaking out of the house to have human connection. I fucking love this kid so much, and there's nothing I can do, you know? But man, he is always in my fucking heart, in my thoughts. People perpetuate the patterns, you know? They perpetuate the patterns of neglect, because I know his dad was super neglectful to him, so he spread it on. He spread it on because of escapism. So the first time that I knew about that he really, really hurt me, I confronted it, and that's what happened. That's how it was received.
He even got to the point where he said something like, yeah, I also follow gay people, but it doesn't mean I want to fuck them too. The whole thing, it was like gaslighting, invalidating, dismissing. There was nothing safe about it at all. I mean, this is the patriarchal conditioning, and I understand that a lot of these conditions are created by this fucked up society, right? Like, boys are given porn magazines when they're 12 years old. It's like, there's this line of like, you don't want to shame this human curious sexuality, but at the same time, how do you do it without perpetuating this idea that it's okay to use women and objectify them? Where is that line? How do you draw that so that men don't feel entitled to do whatever they want to a woman's body, even in the comfort of their own home, even behind their own fucking screen? They can just look up a woman's photo that they find attractive and gratify themselves over it. And it's acceptable? So yeah, you better believe my shit was triggered, and rightfully so. And in turn, that also triggered the fuck out of him to get to the point where he got defensive and he wasn't opening up at all to understand my perspective. He wasn't empathetic towards it. It just became about me shaming him versus the pain that it caused in me. I have been in a pretty healthy dynamic for a little while now, and this is the new frame of reference. We build the new frame because I am in awe with how receptive this person I'm connected with is, where he validates me, he reassures me, he comforts me, he respects my boundaries, he values me, he appreciates me, he provides safe, loving, healing space for me. It's everything. And I'm in awe of it because I didn't have a frame of reference on it. I know that when I would find the courage to use my voice, it would be dismissed. It would be gaslit. I would be invalidated. It would be met with silence. Silence. Anytime he did something hurtful, anytime I expressed something that could help me feel better, it was received with silence. I was punished for using my voice, and what did it do? That silence, that writhing in pain, pulled out my abandonment wounds, pulled out my neglect wounds, that suddenly I would forget about the painful thing he did, because nothing was more painful than the idea of this person leaving me. That's how it fucking works. You get punished for using your voice, and then you're taught that using your voice is wrong because you get punished by people you love abandoning you. This was his MO, and this is what he did. This was his pattern, and it worked so many damn times. Even when I knew better, it worked so many damn times. So this whole thing was a non-negotiable for me at 6 months in, and I already had an attachment with this person, but I was like, no, this is a big incompatibility. You don't find a problem with it. It triggers all of my wounds. Like, you clearly, you know, have this kind of addiction, and your addiction perpetuates my wounding, and it's so bad for my emotional and mental well-being. So the addiction overrides my well-being. The urge to gratify, the dopamine that you get from these pictures and interacting with this porn addiction, that takes priority over my mental health. So that's a no-go. And this doesn't make you a bad person. Once again, you can find somebody who matches up with it. And then that was it. I broke it off. And for about 2 weeks, then boy, oh boy, did my abandonment wounds start coming up.
Like, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe he'll learn from this. You know, holding on to the potential of it. And he posts this snap story that I'm gonna see because I'm pretty much the only one interacting with his snaps. And he's listening to this sad song, probably by, like, The Cure. And the look on his face, he looks so sad. He looks so sad. And what did that do? It preyed on my empathy. And then I matched that energetically and also posted a story of myself holding this rose that he gave me, which at the time I didn't know it was a betrayal rose that he bought me 2 days after cheating on me. But I'm holding this like betrayal rose in my story and I'm equally sad because I fucking miss this person so much. And it all worked. You know, because then I ended up coming back. I ended up chasing. I ended up forgiving it. I didn't really forgive it. It's just like the abandonment wound. It creates addiction in you where we become addicted to people that are not good for us. Addiction turns us into liars. It makes us lie to ourselves. It makes us abandon ourselves. And that's when we met up and he was like, you know, I didn't understand it at first. But I understand it now. I know that it was hurtful to you. And then he talked about how he was going to remove all these people. And this became an obsession for me. Like, I would go on this person's social media and I would still notice tons of these thirst trap accounts there that he didn't remove yet. And I was like, he's not taking it seriously. He obviously doesn't understand the effect it had on my mental and emotional well-being. Like, why are they still there? And I wouldn't question anything. I would just internalize it because I didn't want to be controlling. I didn't want to be possessive. But it created this new addiction in me, this new obsession in me, because all of those wounds were activated. In his words, he took it seriously now. He understands now. He has empathy for it now. But the actions of why are these women still all over his social media kept me in a state of confusion. And then the words he would continue to tell me and the way that he touched me and the way that he looked at me, the hits of dopamine were so great that this stuff, well, I guess I'll just deal with it, right? Eventually, weeks later, I brought it up again just to make sure we were on the same page of what it does and how it like perpetuates the wounding and triggers the wounding. And obviously, it's like not protective of our connection. If we have this certain connection, but you're also spreading it out to everybody else, it suddenly loses its meaning, doesn't it? How is it as important anymore when you're like just spreading the same energy around every other girl? Like, it just is not meaningful anymore. So who's the one who has a problem with the real things in life? Who's actually the one that real shit means nothing to? So basically, you know, things get blamed on ADD. Oh, I just forgot. Yeah, I need to delete those. You're right. Yeah, I'll get on it. I have to delete them. And then he would delete them. But I just had a feeling, man. I just had a feeling. He's still doing it. He is still doing it. And this was months, months, every day intrusive thinking. This addiction was so bad. He's still doing it. He's just doing it secretly. He learned how to manipulate better. Like, I guarantee you, if I go onto his Instagram and go into the search bar, I'm going to see all of their names, even though he doesn't follow them anymore, even though he doesn't like the photos. He's still doing it. And the thing is at the time, I thought he was just looking at them visually. I thought it was just something nice to look at. I didn't know that there was that self-gratification happening. And when I found out that, it made everything worse for me. So this was something that was creating a sickness in me. And I never looked at his phone or anything like that. And I decided, like a year later, maybe a year and a half later, like, I have to look at his phone. I have to. I knew damn well that if I was like, hey, can I just like look at something? There's no fucking way. There's no way that ever would have happened. But this was my own self-abandonment, my own self-neglect, is that to live in this constant state of fight or flight, to be in constant rumination, constant intrusive thinking, to abandon myself so greatly, that's on me. That's on me. These are my own wounds that I have to figure out. That why would I stay in a relationship where I'm in this constant state of confusion, where I'm in constant survival mode? If I have to get to the point where I have to do something like this, you know that this isn't it. There's nothing safe here. I just didn't know that at the time because I was gaslighting myself, self-gaslighting. And that's what we do. We've been gaslit for so long that we end up gaslighting ourselves. This hope and potential that we see in everybody around us, we don't want to believe that people are capable of doing the things that they do because we don't understand it because we don't do things like that. So how could other people, especially with their words, who say that we're worth it, they would do everything for us, they love us so much in the world, we're the most favorite thing ever, how could they do something like that to us? We don't want to believe in it, right? Of course I want to believe that this person respects me and my well-being, and he values and appreciates me, and he loves me, and he understands me, and he has empathy towards me. I don't want to believe that he's using me, manipulating me, preying on my vulnerabilities, pushing and disrespecting all of my boundaries. Why would I ever want to believe in that? Sometimes the fantasy just feels far greater than the reality, doesn't it? So the moment I decided, I have to look at his phone. I need this sickness to stop. If I go onto his Instagram and I go into the search bar and their names aren't there, okay, he's been telling the truth. He really is respecting it now. He's respecting my well-being. He totally gets it. It's like I wanted the noise to stop, and this was the only way that I knew how. And the moment I decided I have to look at his phone, guess what happened? Because this is how the universe works. He was sitting next to me in the bed, and for the first time in our entire relationship, his face ID wouldn't work, and I got to see him put it in his code right in front of me. And that was confirmation, because I wouldn't have been able to look at his phone. It was like, okay, you made this decision that this is something you're going to do. The universe is like, here you go. Now you can do it. Here's the fucking code. So I looked at his phone. I went to his Instagram. There were all the names. There were the names that he said he stopped looking at, stopped following, stopped engaging with. They were all there. So he was lying to me the whole time. He was coercing me to stay. He was manipulating me to stay. None of it was real. None of it was real. It was all his own selfishness, the addiction making him a liar. But he was a liar anyways, even without his addictions. He was always a dishonest human being. I just had to finally stop being dishonest to myself so that I could see him for who he was. When I tell you that there is a whole new world outside of that person that you just wanted their attention, you wanted their love, you wanted their respect, you wanted their kindness. Once you give those things to yourself, everything else opens up for you. There is just so much love out there, so much safety out there. When you stop holding on to these people, when you find consistency within, safety within, security within, it's out there, because then you can see it right in front of you. And the connection I'm in, so much communication, so much transparency, so much reassurance, even though I'm not asking for it, it's just there. There is so much consistency. And this person, he tells me everything. I prayed for somebody real. I didn't pray for a forever soulmate, per se. I just prayed for somebody real. And I was given somebody fucking real. And his phone, it's not flipped over ever, because that's something that the other one did, constantly keeping his phone flipped down. And you know, that's always like a bad sign. Maybe it's not always a bad sign, but I learned in the last relationship that in that experience, it was a very bad sign. And this guy, you know, he's on his phone in front of me, does the whole key code in front of me, gives me his phone to pick out music, to go through things, asks me if I want to like look through things. And I'm like, no, you know, because in his last partnerships, these people were really anxious, and he dealt with a lot of like behaviors of like jealousy and possessiveness and that kind of thing. Those were the things that I embodied in the last relationship, but I internalized it. Like I never ever acted that way. I didn't act possessive. I didn't act jealous. I felt that way on the inside though, but I knew that I didn't want to be that way. So it was like so suppressed. And the person that I'm connected with, he was in situations like that. So I think that that's why with me, he tries to reassure me before I even ask for reassurance. And I just say to him, no, like, I'm good. Thank you though. I appreciate it. I don't want to get into a position again where I have to look through somebody's phone where I don't trust them. Like, I am going to let somebody's actions show me who they are. And that's it. If your actions and words are not aligning, I'm going to question some things. And yes, sometimes things happen. Sometimes people say they're going to do something and things come up and it's a fucking fluke. It's not really a big deal. Overall though, when things become patterns, pay attention to the patterns, because what I have learned so deeply is that the patterns never tell a lie. And once we understand ourselves and can identify our own patterns and break our own patterns, we can then see it very clearly in other people. And then you can decide if it's going to work for you or not. The choice is yours. But the patterns never tell a lie.
And when you break your own patterns and you start building that new frame that you always deserve, you're going to see things around you that you didn't even know existed. There are people out there, men specifically, that don't just talk about wanting to be the change. They actively try to be the change by taking action, by having a willingness to grow, by learning from their mistakes, by changing their behavior. Because remember the other thing we learned about that, apologies without changed behavior is just manipulation. And sometimes we gotta stop manipulating ourselves in order to receive the good that is right there. Thank you so much for listening to The Handbook, Chapter 3. I'm your host, AJQ. This is The Evolution of Self.